Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, October 25th, 2015. This is episode 1232. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Epson's new EcoTank printers. With Epson's line of super tank all-in-one printers, you can print thousands of documents without running out of ink. Epson and the EcoTank printer. Loaded and ready to print when you are. Visit Epson.com/EcoTank to find out more. And by Corning Optical Cables. Corning's incredibly durable Thunderbolt and USB 3-dot optical cables are longer, thinner, lighter, and stronger. Go to Corning.com/twit and use the promo code TWIT to save up to $50 on the USB 3-dot optical cable. And by Gazelle, the online marketplace for buying and selling used gadgets. Shop from a variety of certified pre-owned electronics, or trade one in for cash, or do both. Give new life to a used device. Visit gazelle.com today. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about tech, computers, you know, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz. I hold up my smartwatch, and the smartwatch salute, but I'm not wearing a smartwatch. So, but I can talk about them because I have them all. 8888 Ask Leo is the number. I guess really that's the bottom line of smartwatches. No big deal. I don't miss not having it on. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Yeah, the website techilabs.com. Good to keep that in mind because that's a place where you can go to get anything I talk about, links and so forth. James is traveling right now. James DeRuffo, the guy who normally writes it down. So those links will appear on the website later in the day. And then after the show, we put audio and video up and stuff. And that's all free and there's no sign up. You can just go. It's techilabs.com. So this was Back to the Future week, right? October 15th. No. 21st, October 21st, 2015 was the day that Marty and his girlfriend, Elizabeth Shue, I don't know what her movie name is, and Doc Brown flew into the future. They went from 1985, they went ahead 30 years. Marty, your kids are in trouble, Marty. Great Scott, 1.21 gigawatts of power and 88 miles an hour. And Marty says to Doc Brown, remember, he's got the Mr. Fusion in the back, and he says to Doc Brown, but Doc Brown, the road, how are we going to get the 88 miles? Marty, roads? Where we're going, we don't need any roads. So one thing we know for sure, in 2015, there will be flying cars. No. Well, it is a comedy. I guess, you know, no hoverboards. We have self-tying shoes, but I think really only because of the movie, Nike worked really hard on self-tying shoes. I don't think it's something anybody's going to want to run out and buy, but maybe you saw Michael J. Fox try those on Fallon, and that was kind of cool. What else don't we have? The Cubs are not going to win the World Series. I'm sorry. We thought we came close, but then no. There is a Miami baseball team. That was the thing that puzzled Marty more than anything else about 2015. Predictions are hard in technology. They really are. And it's not, I mean, that movie was probably not trying to actually predict the future. It was kind of a fun, comedic look at the future. But even people who seriously try to predict the future do a terrible job. It was October 23rd, 2001, that Apple launched the first iPod. And I'm looking at the Mac Rumors forum, because Mac Rumors, the website, was around 14 years ago. And people talking about the new iPod. And the general consensus is, what, is Apple crazy? Here's one. Huh. Pants being... Well, one thing we know, that Internet Snark has been around for at least 14 years. A guy named Pants in the forum says, oh, sounds very revolutionary to me. Hey, here's an idea, Apple. Rather than enter the world of gimmicks and toys, why don't you spend a little more time sorting out your pathetically expensive and junky server lineup? Oh, yeah, there's the future, Apple. Or are you really aiming to become a glorified consumer gimmicks firm? Yeah, what a bad idea that would be. See, it's hard to predict the future. I can't believe all this hype for something so ridiculous. Who cares about an MP3 player? I want something new. I want them to think differently. Why or why would they do this? It's so wrong. It's so stupid, says Weezer X80. Oh, wow, says, what a load of tripe. Gee, an MP3 player with a hard drive. How original. Well, of course, they were wrong. But, you know, I it's easy to get it wrong. Predicting the future is deucedly hard in technology. Who knew? Actually, I think those of us who'd been covering MP3 players, and I had had several by that time, I didn't get to go to the Apple event. My friend Jim Louderback went, and he came back with an iPod for me, the first iPod, which I still have sitting behind me. And I think, in my defense, I looked at it and said, boy, this is a step forward, because MP3 players were hard to use. They had terrible user interfaces. And here Apple put 1,000 songs in your pocket in a way that was easy and approachable. And you know what? And they announced iTunes. And, you know, I don't think this was I think you could look at this and some people, same with the iPad, would say, oh, that's stupid. And some people would say, oh, that's great. What I don't think anybody said with the iPad is, oh, that's great for the next 5 years and then tablets are out, which seems to me perhaps what's going on. Very hard to figure out the future in technology, especially. So I, for one, don't ask me what I think the future is going to hold. Although, since you ask, I think one thing that's becoming pretty clear is the future, big data is going to be a big part of our future. It's already a big part of our present. It's going to only get bigger. What is big data? Well, this is a term you will hear a lot about it if you haven't already. People in the computer and technology field are already talking about it. They have for a few years. See, what's happened is our data capacity, our data storage capacity has gone up. 5 gigs in your pocket was a big deal in 2001. I'm holding in my hand, I think, the equivalent of 4 terabytes of storage. And the idea of a petabyte of storage, 1,000 terabytes, is not so far-fetched. Many computer operating centers, you know, network centers, have far many more petabytes than that. So big data means lots of storage and lots of processing power to crunch through that. And it's because of big data that in the last couple of years, we've had to start worrying a little bit more about Big Brother. Because who has the biggest of big data? Well, governments, don't they? And don't forget that the NSA. I don't know what NASA's up to. NASA's budget is not as big as the National Security Agency. National Security Agency has been building a massive data center in Utah. It is a data storage facility. And it goes along with something they've been doing, although lately maybe they've been told to turn this off, which is collecting all the electronic data that's traveling over the world's networks, your phone calls, your emails. Now, we won't look at it if you're not, you know, a terrorist or a foreign national. If you're a United States citizen, we won't look at it now. But they are collecting it. The code name for this Utah data center is Bumblehive. It is designed to support, according to the U.S. security community, the intelligence community's efforts to monitor, strengthen, and protect the nation. Good. Like that. $1.5 billion, 1 million square foot facility with many, many petabytes of data storage. None of which would be important if you couldn't process it, but now you can. And it's not just government, although that's what scares me most. Google's doing it. And Facebook's doing it. Facebook just this week announced that you can now search all the public posts ever on Facebook. Did you know you couldn't before? You couldn't, because Facebook thought, well, those are kind of, you know, those are people posting about their lives and stuff, and we probably shouldn't make that searchable. Well, it is now to anybody on Facebook. And Google will index it. Yes, Google's going to index all your pub. Now, remember, you can still post privately, but all the public stuff you put on Facebook will now be searchable. And this changes everything. Big data changes everything because the knowledge you can get, good and bad, of what's going on is incredible. So think, remember that term, big data, and keep your eye peeled for it, because more and more you're going to hear about the impact of big data on our lives, for good or ill. We're in that era. That's one thing I can predict, because it's happening. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Why did I get all these drives? What happened? All right, I'm going to stop this recording now. Okay. So that recorded for like 15 minutes. Now, I can join it, and I can download it on my phone. Do you want to try putting... Don't take it away yet, because I have to download it first. But, okay, that's 1.7 gigabytes. This is going to take a while. Well, maybe I can just copy it off on a computer. That might be better, wouldn't it? And then I can show you the 3D version of what you just watched. What do you think? And if you had your Google Cardboard... Oh, yeah, good. Okay. Here we go. Oh, how interesting. It imports it. Oh, look at that. Look how it imports that.
Like fish eyes.
It's, yeah. I don't know. Well, you know what? I need to see if I need a special app for this. Let's import it. All right, I'm going to import it, but I might need a special app for that. This is the new Ricoh Theta S. Let's see. Ricoh Theta S. So this is a new 3D camera. You could take 3D pictures with it. I should just do that. Stills, those are smaller. How do you import it? It's spherical. HD live streaming. Yes, it does that. Has a live view. Check the exposure and white balance while shooting using the dedicated smartphone app. So it does stills, but it also does video. It's compatible with the new Street View app. So I could do photo spheres and import them to Street View. It's going to take a while to import this. But what I want to know is, what do I do? Ah, here it is. Thank you, ScooterX. Chat room's very smart. Computer application. I guess I need a special application. I have the app on my... Oh, there you go. That'll work. Spherical viewer. I see. So that's a spherical viewer app. All right. I didn't order these drives. I don't even know where they came from. They're for the Drobo. I don't know if I ordered these or not, but what is this 1 terabyte Western Digital full height drive? And then this Samsung 850. I'm glad I got that, but what am I going to use it in? 250 gigs. I don't know. Maybe did Drobo send this to me? A little packing slip. Your order of October 24th. Well, yes, I see that. Thank you. You know what's amazing? This terabyte drive. Talk about big data. $52.99. Incredible. 2 terabyte drives, $150. Incredible. You want to try it? I'm still copying.
Okay. I need it.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. We were talking about big data, and lo and behold, look what came in the mail today. I must have ordered these. I don't remember it. do you ever, like, maybe wake up in the middle of the night and sleepwalk and order stuff in Amazon? I must have done that. There are a bunch of hard drives. Actually, they're kind of, you know, useful for props. This terabyte drive, Western Digital Blue, 1 terabyte drive, terabyte. It's a lot of storage, right? First iPod was 5 gigabytes. This is 1,000 gigabytes. $52. $52. And then these laptop drives, 2 terabyte laptop drives, $150 for 2 terabytes. 2,000. That's the equivalent of 400 iPods. In a drive that's not much bigger than an iPod. In fact, it's a little smaller than the original iPod. Wow. Wow. So that's how come big data can happen. Hey, it's Heather. No, I'm sorry. It's not Heather. It's Kim Schaffer. I see you now. Kim Schaffer in the other room.
I'm wearing Heather's costume.
Wearing a Heather costume. Happy week before Halloween.
Happy, yeah.
Sunday. Halloween should be a week long now.
It should. And it kind of is. I see a lot of kids in costumes already.
Yeah.
Pumpkin,
we did a great
stuff.
Piece on the new screensavers yesterday, and it's going to be on the Today Show.
Oh, cool.
Not our piece, but the same subject, I think, Monday. A company, a nonprofit called Magic Wheelchair, magicwheelchair.org. And it started with the dad who had a couple of kids in wheelchairs, and they felt left out on Halloween. So he built Halloween costumes around their wheelchair.
Oh, neat.
And they are so cool, and now they have a charity. They're raising money at magicwheelchair.org to do the same for other kids so that they can have magic wheelchairs for Halloween. It's such a great idea.
Huh.
So we talked to Ryan Weimer, who founded it, and it's expensive, but these kids, there are a couple of things the kids get out of it, besides having the best Halloween costume ever. They get accepted and, in fact, embraced in the community. And sometimes I think when a kid is in a chair, maybe they don't get looked at as part of the community. You know, like, they get shunned a little bit.
Yeah.
And this makes the kids are centers of the attention. They're everybody. Wow.
Oh, they'll win all the costumes.
That's
contests.
So cool.
Look at that. Like, what is that? A dragon?
It's a dragon.
Dragon or something?
His
yeah.
son is, or is it his son? No, it was one they made for another kid, because they take applications too, by the way. If you have a child in a chair and you want to get a magic wheelchair for them, they made a Quinjet out of the Avengers movie, and it's got smoke coming out of the back. Oh man, these are so cool. So anyway, I know that's a Halloween costume.
I want
can get
a cool
behind.
Costume like that.
Yeah. So Kim Schaffer has been lining up the calls. I see you have a few here
yeah.
on the board. Who do, I mean, I know they're all wonderful.
They're all wonderful.
Each and every one of them special snowflakes in their own right. But perhaps I have to start with one. I should start with one that you think is a good one to start with.
Well, Daryl in Asheville, North Carolina, like many people, has frustrations with Windows. So he wants to know your advice on some alternatives.
The classic Windows frustration call.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kim Schaffer. Hi, Daryl.
Yeah. Hey, Leo. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. What can I do for you, sir?
Well, I'm sort of semi-computer literate. Talk about prices of RAM and all this stuff. I go back to 95 when I ordered my first Dell. RAM back then was, you know, they had 16 it came with, and I wanted to, no, it's not enough. I need at least 32. Well, yeah, okay, fine. Right then, it was like $500.
I know. Oh, I'm an older timer than you. I can remember it being a lot more expensive. I have hung up on my wall in my studio core memories, and it was 64K core memory. Remember that?
At a digital plant where all the little tiny wires with the little tiny discs.
Little magnet donuts. You remember these?
Donuts, yeah. No, I actually did work at digital for a while.
So you know.
The point is, I got very frustrated. That thing was junk in a couple of years. Here's where I'm at now. Okay. I would like to know your opinion of Linux, because I am kind of frustrated with Microsoft. I have a Windows 7 Professional on a Dell Latitude, and let's see what this sucker got. 2 gigs of RAM, 250 hard drive, and it's got Windows 7 Professional. Anyways, I'm kind of pissed off at Microsoft. I just wanted to know.
You know, I think there are a lot of people.
What do you think of Linux?
I love Linux. So I'll talk a little bit about it, because there's stuff you should know before you jump in.
Well, before I go any further, will I be able to get drivers? Somebody gave me a really nice pair of HP PhotoSmart series printer and HP ScanJet that were basically XP compatible. Would I be able to get some kind of a download through Linux that I could drive those nice printers and scanners?
Yeah, actually, probably. The older the stuff, the more likely it'll work. So let me talk a little bit about what Linux is. First of all, many of us use Linux. All of us use Linux every single day of our lives.
Well, as part of the other operating system.
So Android is based on a Linux kernel with Android on top of it. But also, more than half of all the websites in the world run on Linux. So Linux is a mature and stable operating system. The equivalent of Windows or Macintosh OS X.
It's been around. From it.
Not exactly. No, nobody stole from anybody. Linux was originally written in the early 90s by a graduate student in Finland named Linus Torvalds.
Right.
And he was trying to write an operating system that would be useful in teaching. He, in his computer science courses and the courses he had to TA, they had to use a pretty terrible operating system called Minix that was a kind of a poor man's Unix. Unix is the granddaddy operating system. Unix goes back to the early 70s, and it was created in a number of places, mostly AT&T Bell Labs, which was the great R&D facility of the time. Berkeley got involved, UC Berkeley got involved, and some others. And it was the operating system for geeks. And Unix really is the granddaddy, and then many other operating systems have imitated or duplicated or attempted to match. Minix was not. Minix was just a junky teaching operating system. Linus decided to do Linus's Minix or Linux, and he wrote it in one summer in his kitchen. And very famously, I think it was in 1992, put out a message to the Usenet news groups, which was a early kind of part of the internet, saying, "I've kind of written this thing. Would you like to try it?" It came at a very good time because the internet was exploding, and there were a lot of programmers all around the world who had liked the idea of a free and open operating system they could work on. So people all over the world have contributed to this using the internet, and it has become a very mature, powerful, stable operating system that, as I said, powers much of the internet now. How about for desktop, though? We'll talk about that when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So, let me, by the way, that's core memory. And if you look really closely, you can see this is the memory here. And it's probably not very much. It probably is 8K because, it says right here. This is from a DGC, a digital, Data General Corporation Nova. If you ever read the book, The Soul of the New Machine, the Nova was the mini computer that they were building. This is 16 kilobytes of memory. And you can't see it, but if you had a hand lens or a little magnifying glass, each of those black dots is a donut-shaped magnet or chargeable, actually, ferrous core. And then each of them has a wire going this way and this way. And by electrifying these wires, you could change the polarity of the core to be a 1 or a 0. And then you can read it back because it holds the charge. This is static memory, so you could read it back. 1972. So this isn't that old, really. If you think about it, it's 43 years old.
High school.
Yeah. Yeah, I was in high school when this came out. Isn't that amazing? I don't know who gave us this, but it's one of my most treasured possessions. I wish they'd put their name on it or something, but they didn't. But somebody just sent us these, I think. Do you remember where this came from? I think it was already framed. But that is a memory board, a 16K memory board. You know, I bet we could find out how much that costs, but I'm going to guess it's in the tens of thousands of dollars for that. Because this has to be, I mean, this is hard to make. This is all hand wrapped. That's just amazing. 40 years old, and that was memory. Thank you, John, for bringing that in. That is a that's going with us. I'm not selling that puppy. Let's see, 16K RAM Data General 1972. Oh, that's not bad. Oh no, that's the IBM personal computer. That was only $1,600 for a 16K. Wow. You know, I just need a Data General. What I need is a Data General price list. Nova price list, 1972. Oh, you guys, you already found it. Guy smiling in the chat room found it on eBay.
Huh. Wow. Well, that's not going to tell you what it costs.
So the Data General was a $75,000 computer. Let's see here. The Nova. Best small computer in the world. Sixteen bit word size, 4K. Typical memory size of 4K words sold for $8,000. Well, that was the whole computer. So I don't know what a daughter board memory would cost, though. It was the best small computer in the world. There's some guy drinking coffee.
How's that coffee going?
It's done. Shall I? You want to take it
well,
now?
I'm concerned that this is going to cover up the HDMI port.
Yeah, I think it does, huh?
Yeah, so I'm going to have to find...
I'm sorry I didn't bring in my little... But you want to see the viewer of the video we just did? This is kind of cool. Where did that app go? I swear. Computers. What are you going to do? Sphericalviewer.dmg. No, I already installed it, didn't I? Oh, it's called Spherical Viewer. Don't know where it's installed. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're talking about the past, the present, and the future, I guess, on this show. Daryl in Asheville was asking about Linux as an operating system. So I gave you, I probably went a little too far down memory lane here, giving you the history of Linux, Daryl. I apologize. The question is, how do I run modern stuff on Linux? So Linux is widely available. It is free. Free in two meanings of the word. Free as in doesn't cost you anything in most cases. Although there are companies that base their business on supporting Linux, so it could cost you for the support if you wanted, you know, enterprise class support. And then it's free as in the sense of, you know, free speech. It is open source. You probably heard that phrase. That means you can look at the source code for it. You can modify it if you have the skills to your heart's content. And many thousands of people all over the world have contributed to it. Right. There's a guy named Richard Stallman, one of the original Unix hackers from MIT, who says it really should be called GNU Linux. He created a group, the GNU Foundation. GNU stands for GNU's Not Unix, which was creating an open source. He really kind of created the concept of an open source movement, an open source version of Unix. That's what every real geek wanted, was because Unix was expensive to buy, whether you bought it from AT&T or Berkeley. It was very expensive to buy the paper tapes. And it also had some, you know, encumbrances, some patent encumbrances. So GNU was attempting to write a open source Unix. GNU ended up providing a lot of the applications, utilities, and in your case, the important word, drivers, that worked with Linux. So you, in most cases, when you get Linux, you're getting something called a distribution. That's the bundle that includes the Linux kernel, the heart of the operating system, plus a bunch of GNU and other utilities on top of it, including word processors, spreadsheets, games, all the stuff you expect to come with a personal computer. Richard, kind of rightly so, says it should be called GNU Linux because, you know, Linus just did the heart of the matter. We've done all the rest of it. In any event, the most popular place to get this is Ubuntu, ubuntu.com. Ubuntu is a great company created by a dot-com millionaire, Mark Stallworth, who said, you know, we should make this easy to use. When I first started installing Linux with Slackware Linux in the late 90s, it was really a pain. Thanks to Ubuntu, you can take your old, you know, Windows hardware, something like you've got, and in most cases install it without any trouble, just like you would install Windows. But they've done something even better. They've created something called the Live CD or the Live Install. You'll download from Ubuntu an ISO. I would suggest put it on a USB key. Nowadays, nobody has a DVD burner or CD burner, but you might. You could put it on a DVD or a CD. And you
How
can,
would I get it? Would I mean, just, I remember Ubuntu. Yeah. Should I just punch up Ubuntu and
Yeah, you go to Ubuntu.com and you download it. It's that easy and free. They'll even send you a disk. They have a program to send people disks. But because disks aren't that important anymore, I think the best thing is just download it and put it on a USB key. They have the instructions. And in most cases, modern computers, you can boot to a USB device. You know, you may have to press a key when you start up. There'll be instructions at Ubuntu.com. You boot into that. Now, that means you're running Linux. It's slow because you're running it off the USB device or the CD. But you can verify that it will work with your hardware. And that's the most important first step. Is it? Forget your printers. Is it going to work with my screen and keyboard? You know, it has to do that. They've really, I think, solved these problems. And so in most cases, when you boot up to the Live install, you'll be running Linux. It'll be running fine. Your screen will be normal. You'll kind of say, gosh, I feel this is kind of like Windows. It's got menus. It's got windows. It's got applications. It's got a control panel. And in many cases, you can look at it. You can say, yes, I'm in a different world, but I understand how it all works. There's controls on the windows to minimize them, maximize them, close them. All of that stuff is there. It is a little bit more tricky to get things like peripherals. You're an old guy, and you and I remember that word. Those are the things outside your computer, like your printers working. But the good thing about Linux is it is widely supported by enthusiasts. And so if you have a printer, especially the older it gets, the better. in the Windows world, when a company like Epson makes a printer, their job is to make a driver, a little piece of software that will let Windows talk to their printer. And that's kind of what Epson does. And then Epson submits it to Microsoft. It'll become part of the Windows update facility. You may get a disk in the box. You certainly can go to Epson.com and download it. That driver is what tells Windows how to talk to the printer. Without that, the printer doesn't work. So drivers are really important. Problem is Epson and most other companies just don't have the time to write drivers for Linux. There aren't that many Linux users. It's maybe 1% of the total computer users out there. So they just often don't, or they don't support them well. But enthusiasts do. And so enthusiasts go, well, I want my Epson MX100 dot matrix printer to work with Linux. And you know what? There's a driver for it. In many cases, you'll use the CUPS system. So first thing to do is to boot the Live CD and see if it works out of the box. It might, because Linux comes with quite a few drivers. And then there's CUPS, which is the Common Unix Printing System. And if you go to the CUPS website, you could probably find a driver for each and every printer it made up to maybe last year. Because, again, the newer the printer, the less likely there's going to be a driver for it, which is counterintuitive, I know. In the Windows world, when you buy a printer, a new printer is a good thing. It's much more likely to support Windows 10, the latest versions of Windows, than an old printer. It's opposite in Linux. That's one of the weird things. So chances are good, but you have to do some research. So this is now I'm going to tell you the negative of Linux. A lot of it is on your shoulders. Microsoft and Apple try to make an operating system that consumers, unsophisticated consumers can use out of the box. And they do a pretty darn good job of it. Not perfect, or I wouldn't have a job, but pretty darn good job out of it. Linux doesn't work that way. Linux is created by enthusiasts for enthusiasts. Despite the Ubuntu project, there still is this kind of, you know, feeling that, well, if you're going to be losing Linux, you're going to have to step your game up a little bit. So running Linux on the desktop can be frustrating only because of this driver issue and getting drivers working, getting software working. Microsoft Office, for instance, isn't going to work on Linux. It's written for Windows, unless you run a special Linux tool called Wine that will allow you to run some but not all Windows software. And configuring Wine and getting Wine to run with specific software is an exercise in patience. And so Linux is often considered to be a hobbyist operating system. But as I mentioned, it's really not. It's you're using it every day if you surf the web. You're using it on Android. It can be made to be a consumer operating system. Ubuntu's done a good job of that. So if you have an older system and your system has, maybe outdated its usefulness with Windows, and you don't, or maybe you, like Daryl, don't want to use Windows anymore, go to Ubuntu.com and download it and just see how it runs. See if you can get used to it. A lot of people like to use Linux for secure things like banking. It's not unusual for people to make a USB key with Linux on it that they reserve for their banking and their super secure stuff. It's an interesting idea. There's a Linux version of Linux called Tails, T-A-I-L-S, that is designed specifically for this purpose. T-A-I-L-S.boom, B-O-U-M.org, if you want to find out more about it. It's designed to be put on a USB key and run, or a DVD or a CD-ROM, and run to give you, and you run it and you've got privacy, you've got security. You know, it's for the paranoid, or the real tinfoil hat crowd. So there, enough about Linux. We'll move on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I do want to talk about the Epson Ecotec. May I? What a great idea. What a brilliant idea from a company that, you know, decided not to rest on their laurels. They could, too, by the way. Epson makes the best printers. The new Precision Core technology, 40 million drops of ink a second. They print so fast. They print so beautifully and crisp. It's laser quality black and white text, but you also get color. You also save money because it's instant on, instant printing, no warm up. I love it because, you know, we keep people printing. I have my Epson Ecotec. Actually, I don't have an Ecotec. I have a Workforce Pro. And I leave it on, and it's wireless, and people are printing all over the house. But sometimes nobody prints for 3 days. Sometimes, you know, and the thing is, boom, it prints right away, no matter what. It doesn't use much power at all, so I can leave it on like that. It's just a great convenience. And now it's not even going to need any more ink cartridges. What's the worst thing? You know, you're printing, you're halfway through your print job, and all of a sudden it's out of ink. Oh, you hate that. No more. Ecotec printers from Epson come with 2 years of ink in the box. It's about 50 cartridge sets. So take a look, for instance, at the ET4550. Very affordable. It will print 11,000 black pages before you need to give it ink. 8,500 color pages. And when you need to give it ink, you don't get a cartridge. You get a little bottle of ink. And it's ultra low cost. Epson, I think, deserves a real pat on the back for looking out for consumers. You know, they said, we're going to give you affordable ink. You're not going to have to change it but every 2 years. And you're still going to get all of the great, features of our Workforce Pro printers. So for small office, for big office, for business printing, if you really have heavy-duty, high-volume printing, the WFR 4640, 20,000 pages of ink. Consider that. You got 2 years of ink in that box. Convenience, you get great value, and you get the best printer out there with the Precision Core technology. Auto two-sided printing, 30-page auto document feeder. The wireless printing, not just from computers, but from tablets. It does AirPrint, it does Google Cloud Print, from smartphones. Oh, man. Thank you, Epson, for looking out for your customers. You'll be swimming in ink. Go to Epson.com/Ecotec right now to find out about the Ecotec printers. As far as I'm concerned, unless you hardly ever print, if you're at an office, a small business, at a home user with kids, this is just the choice. Epson.com/Ecotec. EPSON.com/Ecotec. And we thank them so much for their support of the Tech Guy podcasts. Epson! Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. Cash is on the line from Hollywood. Hello, Cash.
Hello.
Hello. How you doing? Sorry to keep you waiting with that long, boring description of Linux.
You know, about a half an hour ago, you were talking about trends and technology and how boring it is. You know what?
You're right.
Johnny Jett's got more exciting news, right?
I'm sorry.
Oh, my
goodness. I'm sorry,
hey,
yes.
You know what?
I'm a nerd.
No, you're right. You're right. You're absolutely right.
What can I do? I'm a nerd.
Here we go into the future. What are we going to see? The iPhone is going to be an Uber? Big deal. Who cares? But better than that.
Yes.
We have plastics. Gorilla Glass.
Plastics. It's the future.
Well, it's plastics and magnets. We're going to look at the iPhone as wearable. It's going to be just above your wrist. It's almost going to look like a tattoo. It's going to be wearable, and that's plastic, and that'll be the iPhone. But you will have the ability to do your Uber helicopter. Because little tiny.
Are you a screenwriter, Cash? You work in Hollywood.
Yes, I mean, you're guilty. I'm guilty. I'm sorry. But
you have a great imagination. But this is my point. Really, was it's very hard to predict the future.
Because, yeah, it is.
You know, because we don't know what's going to happen. You're right. It could be a tattoo. I don't know what it's going to be.
It's we're away with Gorilla Glass. That's done. We're into plastic. It's bendable. It's going to be stuff that can just wearable and put it in your pocket like a wallet.
Okay.
That's going to be the next phones. And then you are going to have your little private jet. There's going to be Skyjets. That's happening in the next 5 years.
Actually, yeah, you can buy them. You can buy them now. I was talking to a friend of mine who's on the list for his personal jet. I mean, like, I don't know if it's a jet, but it's his personal plane. One-man plane that you can fly around. You know what? I don't know. I think the problem, and one of the reasons flying cars haven't taken off is, imagine the kind of congestion we have on the ground in the air. And we haven't, I mean, a fender bender in the air is not a fender bender. That's a little bit more scary. So I don't know if I want flying cars plummeting to the ground over my head. Glenda's on the line from Orange, California. Hi, Glenda.
Oh, hi. I had to get you off speaker.
Good. Thank you. You sound wonderful now.
Well, I am wonderful.
Oh.
But you sound like you don't feel well.
What?
You sound like you have a cold. Maybe.
I do? No, no, I'm not. I don't. Maybe I just have a stuffed up nose. I feel fine. I feel great. I feel wonderful.
Oh, well, you are. I have a question. I need to be able to use either my Droid Turbo or my iPad Air, which I don't know very much about, to scan up to like 30 or 40 documents. I need to do that like in a quick, effective way.
So you're on the right track because, of course, you can get a scanner to scan documents with a sheet feeder and all of that. But for people who want to quickly get pictures, images, documents into the computer, a camera is actually a great way to do it. Now, your Droid has a much better camera than your iPad, probably. Is it the original Droid Max?
It's a Turbo.
Droid Turbo.
I think it's 21
megapixels. I think so too. I have it. I'm just trying to remember. It's a good camera if there's enough light. So what you want to do, ideally, if you're going to take pictures and use that as a way, what are you doing with the scanned documents? Are you going to do optical character recognition, turn the picture into text, or you just want an image?
No, I just need to take a picture. Normally, I would do it from my computer, but there are times when I can't do it.
When you're a spy. Remember the little cameras that James Bond would go... We are so much ahead of that now. Yeah, your camera phone is actually a great little spy tool. The key is light. Camera phones don't do well in low light because most digital cameras don't, but camera phones especially don't. And this applies to your iPad as well because it's a little tiny sensor. So get as much light as you can on that document. If you're in an office with fluorescent lights, that's enough. If you're outside, even better. And then the key is to hold it as still as you can because you don't want it blurry and to frame it. There are apps on Android as well as iOS that are designed to scan documents. I use Evernote, which is a free app you can download, evernote.com for iOS or Android. It has a document scanning mode that essentially is take a picture and it stores it in its database. It even does do some optical character recognition. It sends it back to, if you have the premium version, which isn't very expensive, it sends it back to the home office and they'll at least pull some keywords out of it. So I would use Evernote. And I would put it on your iPad is a 5-megapixel camera, maybe not quite as high resolution as the Droid. The nice thing about the Droid Turbo is you got it in your pocket. You got it with you.
Yes. Now, I have to do like 30 to 40 pages, though.
Yeah, not a big deal. You just turn, you know, click, turn the page. Remember James Bond? He'd break into the evil guy's house, and there's a party going on. He's wearing his tuxedo. He gets into the library, closes the door behind him, tiptoes over to the desk, opens up the desk. There it is, the document. And he takes out his little spy camera. You're just going to do the same thing with your Droid. And you just hold it carefully. You want to get as much as possible at parallel to the paper, right, so you don't get any distortion. You want it to be square, but you can frame it in there and take a picture. And with 21 megapixels, that's like 100 times better than James Bond little camera.
Oh, good.
So you're totally able to. I do this all the time. You know what I do it with? Wine labels. You have a good wine, you're in a restaurant. You say, I like this wine. How can I remember it? Just take a picture. I take a picture. And I put it in Evernote, and then I have it.
Well, then my second part to this is, can I put it all in one file and either fax it to someone or email it?
Yep. This is why I like Evernote. You know, you're going to need a program to do it. You could use the iPhone or the camera program or the Droid camera program. But Evernote's better because it's going to put it in a database, which syncs to your desktop. You could put Evernote, and it's, again, free. It'll be on your desktop as well as on your phone. You don't have to do anything. It'll just do it. And then you can, either from the phone or the desktop, although it's easier from the desktop, email it, save it out. You could do anything you would want to do with it. So, yes, my suggestion is get Evernote on your phone, on your iPad, and on your desktop, and then whatever is convenient, you can use.
So is it pretty simple to figure out how to put it all on one file?
Yeah. It just does it for you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
How cool is that?
Yeah, so this is a really simple.
Life,
there are specialized programs like Scannable for iOS that are, you know, but I don't find that they're any better than Evernote. And Evernote's free, which I love.
Okay.
All right.
Well, you the man, you know.
Well, hey, I thank you. I don't know what more to say except thank you. I am the man. Actually, I am the tech guy. Why did I make it the tech guy? I should be the tech guy. I am the tech guy. 8888 ask Leo, if you have a solution for scanning, I know the chat room is going crazy. Oh, I use this or I use that on your iPhone or your Android device. You can put it in our website. Our website is a great repository for all this. It's techguylabs.com. Each show has its own page at techguylabs.com. And then within each show, we break it down to hour by hour. This is hour one. Question by question. That was question four. And you can go right there, and there's a comment section. You can add your comments. We'll have it all up for you. And it's always free, always available. There's no sign-up. Techguylabs.com. I want to give a little plug for that because it's a useful resource. And it's a chance for you, instead of shouting at me on the radio, because I can't hear you, it's a one-way thing. Put it in the website. That's a two-way thing. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I think I got a great video, but I don't know how to. I'm trying to figure out how to get it off of this thing. What I should, when I plug it in, I should see it, right? Maybe I have to turn it on to do that. It's red because that means it's charging. Okay, yeah, I have to turn it on to do that. All right, so that mounted it. Now, why don't I sell? It doesn't mount it. Mounts it as a camera. Oh, I know. Image capture would do it. Yeah, image capture. There you go. And import that to pictures, yeah. Where are all the images? There aren't no images on there. What the heck a wrecker. It sees it. Oh, did it oh, you know what? I bet iPhotos erased it. Yeah, I think iPhotos erased it. Thanks a lot.
That was too long anyway. You need a short one.
Well, I'm going to save this out. Isn't there a way to do that? Share.
Oh, it is an iPhoto.
Yeah, it is an iPhoto. And it's playing. That's cool. Share that to...
a file? It'll show original in Finder.
Oh, did it say that?
Will that right-click show original in Finder?
No. Do you see it?
Maybe that's only in iTunes.
Yeah, it's an iTunes thing. You know, I freaking...
Oh, it makes all of them. Well, but you looked in originals, right? You looked by date in originals and didn't see it.
That's the share menu. For crying out loud, you piece of... All right, I'm going to share it to Facebook or YouTube. Let's share it to YouTube.
How do I share it to YouTube? Where's YouTube? I got Sina Weibo and Tencent. I got Telegram and To-Do. I got Pocket. I got MailMate. I got Evernote. But do I have share to YouTube? No, because Apple doesn't like YouTube, so I can share it to Facebook. For crying out loud. Share it to Facebook. All right. Now, it's going to take a while. Exporting. Well, 3 minutes. That's not so bad. It must be crunching the hell out of it. Because it's 1.8 gigabytes on the Ricoh.
Leo, let's talk about James Bond's camera.
Yeah, what about James Bond's camera? Was it a Leica?
Who knows, but it was using film.
I know it was using film.
So, 21 megapixels.
No. Remember, how big was the frame on that sucker?
I don't care. The film's the size of a silver molecule.
No, it's not the size of it. I wish it were the size of a silver molecule. It's the size of a piece of silver oxide or silver something.
Molecule.
Not a molecule. It's not a molecule.
Silver oxide's a molecule.
No. It's kind of like what is it? Silver. It was a Minox. That's what it was. You're right.
So what is the resolution relative?
Well, there's always, you know, we often ask this question. And dynamic range and resolution are the two questions because they don't quite, you know, match up. But given the frame of the Minox, which is probably a quarter inch or tiny, right?
Well, 10 millimeters.
That means how many silver, what is it, silver halide, silver?
A ton.
But each one isn't a pixel, is not the equivalent of a pixel.
Interesting problem.
Interesting.
So we're trying to make a stand that doesn't block the HDMI port on that thing.
I have one at home. I wish the heck I'd...
Well, that one might block the HDMI port, too.
No, I don't. I think it's pretty small. You know what you need is like... Well, maybe it does, actually, because it's not in a whole lot of space, is it?
Yeah, we have screws. We're trying to make it stand out of a screw, out of a bolt.
Richard says, I love my Minox. Okay, it's publishing to Facebook.
Woohoo!
Tech Bear says, Leo, I love you, and I never want you to retire, but when do you think you will so I can mentally prepare? I'm going to retire when my mustache turns gray. Whoa! I think I will never retire. However, I probably will die in the saddle, and I can't tell you when that's going to happen. I'm doing my best to survive. Hey, Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, microwave ovens, anything with a chip in it. 888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside those areas, you can just call via Skype. Don't call collect, but you can call via Skype. 888-827-5536. I've been playing with something I've been waiting for some time. I'm very excited about this. I mean, maybe you've even heard me talk about it. This is a camera from Ricoh. It's kind of a purpose-built, one-of-a-kind thing. It's called the Theta S. This just came out. The Theta has been out for a while. In fact, somebody showed me the Theta. And this is a camera intended for one thing only, 360-degree pictures and video. So it's about the size of a candy bar or a small remote control. Has Wi-Fi built into it, so you can pair it to your phone. And then it has two lenses at the top, two fisheye lenses at the top, front and back. And the idea is you can just take a picture by pressing the button, and it will, with one shot, no panning, no moving the camera around or anything, get a fully 360-degree photo. And by the way, they're doing some magic in the software because you don't even see the camera, but you can see your hand holding the camera fully, and you can see the ceiling above you. There's no holes. You know, sometimes you do a panoramic shot, and you get, you know, there's like a blank space above and below. This thing, with some sort of software magic, does a full sphere around you. I just took a picture, a spherical picture. Now, my hand will be in it, because that's part of the sphere, and it's kind of an interesting idea. The real reason I got it is the video. November 7th, the New York Times is going to release their first, they call it virtual reality, not fair. It's not. It's immersive video, and they're going to ship with the Sunday Times a piece of cardboard. It's called Google Cardboard. Google handed it out a couple of years ago at their developer conference. You assemble it into what looks like a ViewMaster. Remember those old kids' toys where you put it up to your eyes and you press the button, chink, chink, and the little disc would go around? Well, it looks like that. In fact, you even have to hold it to your eyes. But there's a difference. Before you do this, you slot your smartphone in there, iPhone or Android. It has to be a fairly recent model. And it has to have the Google Cardboard software on it. There's a little NFC chip, believe it or not, in the cardboard. An Android phone will wake up and say, oh, I'm in cardboard, and go into the app, run it automatically. iPhone can't do that, so you'll have to launch the app. And then navigate to the video, but then you'll be in the movie. So if you're looking forward, you'll see what you would kind of normally see looking forward. But if you notice, you can turn your head, and there'll be something to your left, something to your right. You can even look behind you, and you'll be seeing what was behind the camera. Wow. They call it an immersive movie or virtual reality. I think virtual reality is the popular term. Although, frankly, this is not virtual reality. It's real reality. It's a movie of the real world in a different way. You can also watch it on a flat screen on your computer. The difference is, instead of turning your head to look around, you'll use your mouse or your keyboard to pan and look around. But the video continues, the audio continues, and you're looking around. I wore my virtual reality headset during the Democratic debates on CNN. They did this on CNN. I don't know how many people did it, but you'd install some software on your phone, and then you would be in the room during the Democratic debate. At first, I thought this is terrible because I was sitting in the back of the room. I'm way in the back. And these cameras are unobtrusive, so people, I think, didn't know they were on camera. Because I'm looking to my left, there's the big, you know, CNN camera operator, the big camera. He's chewing gum. He's looking at his wrist. Why? He's not doing nothing. He's nothing. Hasn't started yet. I look down. There's an audience member below me looking at his phone. I can see his phone. Hey, dude, you're on TV. And then in the distance, you see the stage. But this was cool because they had multiple cameras. So then they switch, and now I'm backstage. I'm watching Sheryl Crow. She's about to sing the national anthem. I don't think she knew she was on TV, because we all think, oh, well, you know, I'm safe back here. I know there's a cameraman pointing at me, but I know they're not going to put me on it. So she's tucking in her shirt. She's checking her. I'm watching this. I feel like a spy. And then there's one more on stage right. And this is what was most interesting. You can, instead of looking at whatever the director tells you to look at, you know, when you watch a TV show, the director switches cameras and points, in effect says, look at this, now look at this, now look at this. And directors are good, they do a good job, but maybe you're saying, well, I'm interested, while Bernie's talking, I wonder what Chafee's thinking. Well, in virtual reality, you just look. It's like you're in the audience for real. I mean, it's amazing. So, but what's amazing about this camera to me is this does that same thing, but you can own it for $350. That's a lot for a camera that just does that. On the one hand, but on the other hand, I have a virtual reality video camera for $350. So I've posted the first video. I recorded the first segment of the show today, an hour ago. And I'm uploading it now to my Facebook page. And it's still processing, which I'm not surprised. It's a big video. And I don't know how good the quality will be, because on the camera, it's an HD 1080p video. It was 1.3 gigabytes for 15 minutes. That's a lot of data. I doubt very much you'll see it in the full resolution on Facebook. YouTube also supports this now. So you can put these 360-degree videos on YouTube. And in both cases, Well, certainly YouTube's case. I'm not sure about Facebook. But in YouTube's case, you can watch it flat, use your arrow keys to turn around and stuff. But you can also put on your Google Cardboard, and they have a YouTube player in there, and you can be in, you'll be in the studio. You'll be able to look behind me, in front of me. You'll see what Kim Schaffer's doing while I'm talking. You'll see what I see. I'm intrigued. We're not so far off from this. I mean, I guess you can't say we're far off at all. I have it in my hand, from the ability to make virtual reality content. That's what's really interesting to me. 8888 Ask Leo. I'll tell you what. I'll let you know when the Facebook post is done. It's been publishing for the last 10 minutes. It's a lot of video. They're processing it. I'll let you know when it's available. Yeah, you know, somebody is asking about Google Street View. Yeah, that's another thing you can do. You can upload directly to Google Street View the stills. So I can take a picture of this studio and then upload it to Google Street View, so that when you visit on Google Maps, when you come and stand outside the studio, you can actually go in and look around. And more, you're able to do that with Google Street View. And I think with this camera, realtors are going to love these, right? If you're a realtor, you should run and buy this. It's the Ricoh, R-I-C-O-H, Theta S. I got it on Amazon, about $358. I'll post. You might want to wait till you start seeing some stills and videos to see if the quality is good enough. I think it is now. I didn't buy the first one. This is the second edition because the quality wasn't great. But I think they've got the quality down pretty well. Pretty interesting what's going on here. 8888-ASK-LEO. That is the phone number. Let's go back to the phones. And Bill is on the line from, all right, Bill, tell me how you say it, Homosassa, Florida? Did I get that right?
You got it totally correct.
Wow. Whereabouts is Homosassa?
It's about 45 minutes northeast of Tampa.
Okay. Now, unfortunately, we're running out of time, so I got you on. Hang on. We're going to go. We'll take a little tiny break, and we'll come back. And you have a micro SD card question. Is that right?
Yes, I do.
All right. Hang on. We're coming up on your question next. Just want to give you a little tease. 8888-ASK-LEO. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm really excited. So I got this new Drobo, and it's going to support Thunderbolt. So I ordered the new Corning optical Thunderbolt cables because I want to have, this is 18 feet. I want to have, but they go up to, you know, like 100 or 200 feet. Because these are optical, and the throughput is phenomenal. So I was really pleased. But you can also use, they have USB 3.0 as well. So the idea is this is going to have four drives in it. It's going to be noisy. It's going to be hot. I don't want it on my desk. So I'm getting a Corning cable so I can put it distant from my desk. And you might say, well, Leo, I have experience with these cables. You don't want fiber because, you know, fiber's glass. Sure, it's fast. Sure, it's the fastest way to transmit data. But glass, my friend, glass breaks. Well, you can figure these guys at Corning. They know a little bit about glass. Let me get some of this stuff out of here. I know this is going to be complicated. Oh, they sent me a kit. This is kind of fun. I love doing this. To show you that this new fiber optic stuff from Corning is wow. Is wow. So here's the demo. I'm going to use a laser because that's kind of what fiber optic is. It's sending light down a glass thread effectively, and it modulates the light, blinks it very, very fast for ones and zeros, and it's a very efficient, very speedy way to transmit data. But historically, these fiber optic cables have been a little delicate. You know, when we put the fiber optics in downstairs, the engineer said, don't step on that now, whatever you do. So this is a laser, okay? So I can fire light down this cable, all right? And you can see that, right? All right. Now, normally, with a fiber optic cable, you would never want to do that, but I just tied a knot in it, and, well, it's still working. Whatever you do, they say, do not crimp your cables, whatever you do, because that will just kill the let's see. Not only going to crimp it once, I'm going to crimp it this cable. Hope I'm doing the right one. Yeah, four times. I mean, and jam it in these little holes, this special block provided by Corning. I guess they had these made. I don't know why. Anyway, This is crazy. If you've ever used fiber cables, you'd say, oh, no, that's crazy. But with these guys at Corning, you think it's still blinking? What do you think? Yep, takes a bending and keeps on sending. These cables are incredible. So I know, and the distances they'll go are incredible. So the Thunderbolt cables will go 200 feet, 60 meters. The USB 3 cables, 165 feet. And that's fabulous. Without losing any speed, in fact, you're going to get the highest throughput possible. You're going to get an incredible cable. So I can now put this noisy hard drive in another room, in the closet, in the basement, wherever. Thanks to the Corning and these new fiber optic cables. I want you to visit the website, corning.com/twit. We'll get you $30 off the 30-meter, $50 off the 50-meter USB 3.0 optical cables. There's no limit. Buy as many as you want. We're converting most of our studio over. Fiber optics. This is how Thunderbolt was originally designed. Go to corning.com/twit and use the promo code TWIT to save up to $50 on the USB 3.0 optical cable. Okay, I'm going to import this still. Upload successful. Now, how do I view it? Let's do image capture from the Ricoh Theta. Import all two pictures. There we go. All right, I'm gonna do that. That's good. Let's do that. Import all. It's going to take a little while. These are big images, so. All right. Now, let me see if I can. Whoa! Let me see if I can show you what this looks like. Yeah, that is weird looking. Okay. Now, that that's the still I took while I was talking about it. But you don't want to see it this way, right? This is like a dumb reproduction of it. But it did all the stitching. And you can see there are no holes. But what you want to do is you do it in the viewer. Drag and drop the spherical image, all right? All right, here's the viewer. Dragging and dropping. Oh, there. Now, okay. Now you can move around. See, there you guys are. Yeah. So now you can see the whole thing. That's the spherical. I think the quality is pretty good. You can read the chat room. And this is what I mean. You see, they've somehow edited the camera out. So when I scroll down, I just see my hand. There's a camera in that hand, but you wouldn't know it. And there's no hole. Typically on these things, there's a hole in the roof. So this is pretty cool. So the need would be certainly, for instance, as we build our new studio, I will do a lot of videos and photos of this. I want to do 360-degree video blogging. I think the quality on this is superb. I'm very pleased with this. I should post this too. Should have gotten a manicure. I did on Friday. I don't know why my fingernails look so. That's terrible. How can I edit out my cuticles? Yuck. You can see also what a mess my desk is. That is really awesome, isn't it? Oh, the quality is excellent. You can read the text, right? You can read my copy. You can read the chat room. Yeah, I mean, that's good quality.
Can you read their seat almost?
Isn't that amazing? So the video is going to be interesting. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, rocking and rolling. Thanks to our musical director, Nathan Staton, spins the hits. By the way, we do put the playlist for the song. Somebody wrote me and said, I don't know. I love the songs, but I don't know what they are. We put the playlist. Nathan sends it to us, and we put it on our website, techguylabs.com, at the bottom of every show page. You can go to the show and see all the songs that you heard in the in-betweens. 8888 Ask Leo. Bill called us from Homosassa, Florida. And what's your question, Bill? Thanks for hanging on.
Well, I have a few of the micro SD cards that are XC.
Yes.
And
that just means higher capacity. Those are the more modern cards.
Yes, so I have particularly a 1 terabyte.
Wow.
And a couple of 512s.
Those are nice. Wow.
And I can't seem to get
my computer to write to their full capability.
It's very possible that your computer can't handle the high capacity of those. What operating system and how old is the computer?
Computer's about, well, I've actually tried it on three of my machines.
Oh, okay.
I started with one that was Windows 7. I've tried it on Windows 10.
Right.
On another one of my machines, and they all have USB 3 ports on them.
All right, these are modern systems that should be able to handle it. These files, or these cards are formatted in the EXFAT, EXFAT.
Right.
That's the Extended File Allocation Table. That's a newer file system that really is intended to handle these extra large capacity drives.
And I've also tried reformatting the cards into the NFS.
NTFS, yeah.
And I get the same result either way. They're reading the full capacity of cards.
Yeah.
When the cards are scanned, they're saying that they're working properly. They recognize the full capacity of the card. As far as when I am formatting them or whatever, but they just will not transfer the data to the full capacity of the cards.
EXFAT is not, these XC micro SD cards have been around for about 5 years. EXFAT has been around since Windows XP Service Pack 2, so an OS 10 reads it. You can reformat them, which you tried to NTFS. That makes them non-compliant. You know, there's the SDXC standard requires XFAT, but that doesn't matter for your purposes.
Right.
I think it's the reader you're using. What are you using to read them?
Well, I have special USB XC dongles that are going into their USB 3, and they're going into a USB 3 slot.
That's modern stuff. That ought to work. That is the case, for instance, phones which take micro SD cards. Some of the early phones could only handle 32 gigabytes. The most recent Google phones and the Windows phones, in fact, that Microsoft made a big deal that their new 950 and 950 XL SD card slots could handle, I can't remember what they said, I think hundreds of terabytes. The standard itself, the XC standard, I think goes to 2 terabytes. So
right.
I don't know what the biggest cards are, but there certainly are. You have a terabyte card, right?
Right.
Yeah. So there.
And I have 512 cards that do the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, I just have to feel. I feel like that it's the reader has to support it, right? The operating system has to support it, and the reader has to support it because it's a USB device. The reader is the most important part. You just have to check the specs of the reader and make sure that it will support a 1 terabyte SDXC, micro SDXC card. And I feel like that's the issue. It's got to be the issue. Unless, and this is something that does come up from time to time, you've got bogus cards. This happened actually with the Chumbi. So the guy named Bunny Wong was one of the great MIT hackers. Bunny created a really cool little device called the Chumbi. I don't know if you remember it. It looked like a bean bag, but it had a screen in it. And it had SD cards. It supported SD cards. And he was having trouble with manufacturing. Some of them worked great. Some of them didn't. And Bunny, being Bunny, went to China to the factory where they were making the SD cards. And he found out a kind of depressing fact, which I think is still the case. This factory, during the day, made the real cards. It was a big brand name you'd recognize. And at night, they kept the factory going, and they'd make junky ones that they would sell, basically counterfeit, and they didn't live up to the specs of the official cards made during the day. Perhaps they were taking cards they made during the day that didn't work as expected and reselling them under the table as well. So this is an issue. It's an issue on Amazon. It's an issue everywhere. You can get cards labeled micro SDXC 1 terabyte that aren't or that it'll work once. So The first thing I would say is make sure your reader is capable. And it should say in the specs what the maximum size that reader can handle. And that, by the way, is an issue. A terabyte card is not very common. You must have spent a pretty penny for it. And it may be well be that the reader, despite being USB 3 in a modern state of the art, it just didn't expect anything bigger than 128 gigabytes. Well, I don't know what this is. That's possibility one. Possibility two, especially with a terabyte card, that you didn't really get a terabyte card, that it's a counterfeit, a fake. It might say a big brand name on the side. It might have the right label, because in some cases these are made in the factory, the same factory that the original was. So I would, something's wrong, obviously. It is not your operating system. It could be either the card reader or the card itself. And if you didn't spend an awful lot of money for this terabyte micro SDXC card, then it's a fake. If it was $53, it's a fake. And this is even true on Amazon. Amazon does, of course, sell stuff directly itself, and we'll stand by them. And by the way, should stand by anything fulfilled by Amazon. But fulfilled by Amazon is different than sold by Amazon. And then there's a third thing, which Amazon will negotiate with a third party to sell it to you, and it's fulfilled by the third party. And they all look like they're sold on Amazon. But the standards can vary. So for best results, buy something sold and fulfilled by Amazon. But even stuff that's fulfilled by Amazon, but not sold by Amazon, will generally have, you know, a good return policy. It's the third-party sellers that maybe are a little sketch. So be careful. And if you bought it on eBay, all bets are off. I think most likely that's what happened. Because if it was too good, if it was a deal that was too good to be true, it was. I can only imagine what the cost of a terabyte micro SDXC card would be. In theory, those cards go up to that size. But now, Dark Jedi in our chat room has a suggestion for a tool we'll put in the show notes, the Disk Apart tool that might help from How To Geek. We'll get that article up there. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. All right, let's see if the Facebook thing went up.
It's up there.
Is it?
Yep.
Can you see it?
I can.
There we go. Ah, so if you have Google Cardboard, is the audio on there?
So
the audio is there.
You record it. Hello. And people can look around in the. So I'm going to post it on YouTube.
Let's go live. Next to my out. We'll put that on the screen.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly.
That's so weird. Okay, so I don't know how you view this, so I'm going to put this in the Gear VR now. Put that in here. I hope it doesn't exit out. It exited out. Darn it. Chris Marquardt is here. He's our photo guy, back from his tour of the world. Where were you again?
Oh, I was in the United States, not just the world. It was San Diego, it was San Francisco, and it was Brick House.
Did you have fun?
Of course.
Oh, yeah, you were here. How could I not know that? No, I'm just teasing. Hey, well, welcome back to the radio. We can apparently only do radio with Chris if he's in Germany.
Yep.
Did you see me playing with this thing?
With
the Ricoh Theta S camera?
Yes, I did, and I'm getting antsy. I want one of these.
This is cool.
That is pretty amazing, yep.
Now, it's early days, so there's a few hitches in the get-along. For instance, I've posted it now on Facebook, but if you just go there without a special viewer, you're going to see a very strange picture. But mm-hmm. I think if you play it back in Google Cardboard or with a VR helmet, you'll be able to see it as an immersive 360-degree video. This also takes stills, $350. Ricoh Theta, Thetas.
The ViewMaster is back.
Yeah. But, we've been waiting, right? We've been hearing so much about VR for not just the last year or two, but for 20 years. I remember in 1992, I think, going to SIGGRAPH, the big graphics conference, and putting on a giant helmet, which had a big cable, an umbilical cord attached to it, going back to a massive million-dollar Silicon Graphics Onyx computer, and I was able to see myself riding a pterodactyl. And that was pretty cool, but it didn't seem practical.
And those were massive machines.
And they were very expensive. I mean, it was a million-dollar thing. Now here we are 20 years later, and for $99 or less with cardboard for 50 cents, you could. In fact, if you're a subscriber to the New York Times, November 7th, you're going to get one in your New York Times package, and then you can watch these immersive videos. So I recorded the first segment of the show in 360 degrees so people could experience what it would be like to be in the studio. It's kind of an interesting idea. Are you intrigued by this stuff?
Oh, yes, I am. I mean, this is moving towards something somewhere in the future where we're actually going to kind of record these 3D environments and then do the photography in there. You know, you can just have a virtual camera and snap individual shots in a virtual world. So you can go to places that you couldn't go before. And I think
like Everest, exciting. You go up to a base camp every
that
year.
That would be a great idea
to get Everest. Yeah.
To take 3D video up there.
And the point is, you could do, this has been doable for some time, but not at $350 with HD video.
I remember these like you had to have some contraption with like 16 cameras or something.
Yeah. Well, you still
doing
do.
This with just two cameras is very amazing. Very amazing. Yes,
pretty amazing. So now you're going to have to rejigger all your advice on how to take photographs because we're now going to have to do composition in 360 degrees.
Well, make things interesting. New challenges. I like new challenges.
I know you like new toys. Anyway, welcome back. It's great to have you. What do you want to do today? I didn't even get a chance to ask.
Oh, as I was gone so long, we have an assignment.
Should we do a review?
Let's do a review. I sent you an email. It's the harvest assignment. Now, I again have made a choice of three pictures. We had 100 people sending in pictures for the harvest assignment. And I made a choice of three that I found that reflect that topic in a quite nice way.
We should explain that this isn't a contest. There's no prize. The prize is getting the attention of Chris Marquardt. And we thank all of you for submitting all these pictures. And we thank Renee Silverman for running the group. It's the Tech Guy group on Flickr. So where should we start?
Well, let's start with the first picture I chose, which is by Terry Volkman, called Ready for Harvest.
Oh, it's beautiful.
And it's just... First of all, look at the light. This is completely diffuse light. So there's no harsh sunshine or anything. So together with... Okay, well, let's explain for the listeners on the radio. These are grapes, red-blue grapes in front of green leaves. And the way the light plays around the grapes... You know, the grapes, they have this little... I don't even know what you call it. A bit of a matte thing out of they're not glossy.
They're kind of fogged. Yeah.
They're kind of fogged, yeah. And the way the light plays with that is just beautiful. And the colors are perfect. So harvest, yes, that's definitely harvest. Those are probably slightly beyond their harvest.
Yeah, they look like they've been sitting there for a while. Thank you, Terry.
That's when the wasps come out or the hornets come out.
Great image.
And eat them. Next one is by Lee Whirling, the squirrel pecan harvest.
Harvest can mean many things.
it can. And in this case, it's just this little scene and you look at it and it's pretty clear what happened, even though there's no squirrel on it. Because you see on the ground, you see pecan nut shells, I guess. Very shallow depth of field. So Lee used a... Actually, let's check. Ha! Used an iPhone for this.
Wow. I mean, that's very impressive. Not even the newest iPhone. This was taken in August, so he's talking an iPhone 6.
There might be some help from an app or something, but I'm not sure. Maybe the iPhone can actually do that. So the way you can do this is by going really close to something, and this is pretty close at this shell, this open, cracked open shell of a pecan nut. And this way you get this beautiful shallow depth of field, which just works really well.
Really nice picture with an iPhone, folks. And that's important. You don't need a fancy camera to take great images.
You can do so much now, yeah.
Yeah, very
definitely.
Nice.
And the last but not least one is by Randy Rushing, Wild Grass. And the reason I chose that one is because it's this beautiful tone-in-tone composition. You see a few of those what do you call them, actually?
That's wheat. It's
wheat, yeah. The wheat. How do you call the top of the wheat? That
I don't know.
I don't know either.
If the Germans don't have a name for it, I know we don't. Wheat
well,
tops.
It's Ehren in German. Ehren. That doesn't really
help. See, I knew the Germans would have a word for it.
The tops of the wheat. Yeah. Some of them are in focus, some of them in the front. So you get this nice depth in it. And I completely love the tone-in-tone nature. That if I had to write an article about a harvest, that's the photo I would use for this article.
Yeah, because
I think
clip
it's
art.
Pretty beautiful.
But what's nice is it's all really different tones of yellow. So it's a monochromatic picture in that sense. Is you know, it's yellow. But it's really gorgeous, really gorgeous.
But it's tone in tone, so there's nothing really that distracts from anything. This is a really, it sets you at ease. There's no tension in the picture. Yeah. It's really kind of, it rests in itself, and I like this a lot.
People are trying to come up with the English language word. It's not the stalk.
Tassels.
Is that what it's called, the tassel? It looks like
chaff,
a tassel.
Grains, well, the grains, yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Beautiful images. So thank you, everybody. This is just a kind of a way to get you out in the field taking pictures. Chris gives us an assignment and a month, or in this case, a little more than a month, to respond, upload those images to the Flickr group, the Tech Guy group on Flickr. What do you want to do this week?
Okay, so it's obviously close to Halloween, so we got to do something with orange, but orange with a... with a condition. Okay. Orange, but no plants.
Orange, but no plants.
No plants. Right. No pumpkins, no oranges, no...
Oh, pumpkins are out. Okay, orange, but nothing...
Pumpkins are plants, aren't they?
No plants, or pumpkins or anything like that. Okay. Challenge for you, everybody. Post that picture. Tag it with the word orange on our Flickr group, the Tech Guy group. And, of course, you'll find Chris Marquardt here every week. And at discoverthetopfloor.com. Thank you, Chris.
Sure.
That was fun. Those are some nice pictures. I'm really happy with those. Those are really beautiful.
Good quality stuff.
Yeah. I love the iPhone picture.
Yeah, I'm still kind of surprised how shallow the depth of field on that actually is.
These newer cameras, no, it could very well be out of the box that way, believe it or not.
2.2. I got a 6S. I need to try this.
I think you can do a pretty good depth
I need to try
field
this
now.
Right now. Yeah. I need to try this
go out
right
there.
Now.
Let nice
me
HDR
see.
Image.
Yeah. You get this. This is probably the closest focus distance that the iPhone can do.
That's pretty cool.
That's
pretty cool.
There you go. It does work.
Yeah.
Magic.
All right, Chris.
All right, talk to you again next week. Yep, I'll be here.
Welcome home.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Oh, there's so much new stuff. There always is, isn't there? New phones, new tablets, new gadgets to buy. What do you do with the old ones? I hope you're not just throwing them in the drawer over here. Oh, man, that's the worst thing you'd do. You wouldn't do that with $100 bills, just toss them in your drawer to gather dust. No. Well, that's what you're doing if you're not selling your old gadgets to Gazelle.com. Gazelle.com is the best place to go to sell old gadgets. You can get a quote right now for your old gadget. Just visit Gazelle.com. Click the Sell Smart button. They buy old iPhones and iPads. They even buy broken iPhones and iPads. But they also buy cell phones from BlackBerry and HTC and LG and Motorola and Nokia, Samsung, tablets from Amazon and Asus and Google and Microsoft. Get a quote. Those quotes are locked in for 30 days. That means you don't have to decide today whether you're going to sell it. In fact, you can wait till you get the new thing, set it up, transfer your data over, and then say, Gazelle, I'm ready to sell. They'll send you a box. They pay the shipping on anything worth more than a buck. If you forget to wipe the data, they'll do that for you too. And they even will check your condition of your device. And I have had this happen to me several times, so I know they do this. They'll even give you more money if your device is in better condition than you thought. What? That's great. No company does that. Gazelle does that. By the way, they don't just buy, they also sell. You can buy certified pre-owned gadgets from Gazelle. Every one of them has gone through Gazelle's very rigorous 30-point check to make sure that they're not only completely operational, but cosmetically usable. You know, no scratches on the screen, things like that. They've got an incredible selection of quality pre-owned devices at amazing prices. Shop for iPhones, for iPads, Samsung Galaxy phones. If your kids lose their phone, this is the place to go. If you lose your phone or break it, this is the place to go. And by the way, now that the new iPhone is in stores and the new iPad is sure to follow, this is the best time to buy a certified pre-owned device, because as those old phones pour in, the prices go down for you. So to sell or to buy, you got to go to G-A-Z-E-L-L-E, gazelle.com. Give new life to used electronics. Trade them in for cash or buy certified pre-owned. They do both at gazelle.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion. 888-8. It's toll free, by the way. 888-827-5536. We go back to the phones, and Julia's on the line from Yorba Linda, California. Hi, Julia.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. I'm hoping you can solve this problem for me.
I'll try.
My Windows Live Mail has decided to reject any email coming from Gmail accounts. I have Windows 7 Pro. I'm using DSL Extreme as my server.
Okay.
I've tried switching from the POP3 to IMAP.
It is IMAP, although you might be able to use POP3 with Gmail. I prefer to use IMAP.
Didn't change a thing.
Well, because when you switch to IMAP, you have to use a different server.
Okay.
So check the Google Mail settings, and you're going to want to make sure that in the live email program, you have the right sending and receiving server settings for Gmail.
We checked that. I went through this with DSL Extreme.
Oh, all right.
We did all that, and they couldn't find what was wrong. I know it's live mail. I tried using the repair function on Windows. And it said repaired properly, and it's still not working.
I don't think it's live mail broken. When this happens, it's almost always a settings issue.
Okay.
And it worked, and then it just stopped working at some point.
Yeah, so now my husband's on a different computer, but we checked our settings, and his settings are exactly the same as mine, a different email address, but he has no problem getting Gmail. It'll bounce at the bottom of the screen and then disappears. And it's on the DSL Extreme server site, so I can get it there. I took one of my email accounts and set it up through Thunderbird, and it works just fine. Okay.
A couple of things you need to do. First of all, you need to go into Gmail's settings and make sure you have enabled IMAP.
Okay.
Okay. You can also enable POP, but you can't do both. So you need to – and then when you're in there, by the way, that's in the forwarding and POP IMAP settings section. When they're in there, you'll see configuration instructions, a link that will walk you through configuring the proper servers and everything.
Okay.
You'll need your Google login. Do you have two-factor on your Google?
I have no idea.
Okay, that could be one problem. If you have two-factor authentication turned on, which I recommend, you'll need to use an app-specific password with Gmail instead of your regular Google password. So that's one thing to check.
Okay.
See if you have two-factor turned on.
Okay.
And then you'll also have to I'm actually going to put a link to the article I'm looking at right now that walks you through it. But it's in your Gmail settings, and I think the key is going to be to go to the Gmail settings, make sure IMAP is enabled, and then click the link right above that that says configuration instructions, and
okay.
make sure it's configured. This should work. Live Mail is actually a good client to use with Gmail. It should work fine. Let me ask this, though. Can you go on your browser and look at your Gmail?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's there, and your password's correct. So then it's just going to be you may also have to turn on make sure there's a secure connection. Google rejects insecure connections, which it should, because you don't want to be looking at your email in a coffee shop and in an unencrypted connection, then everybody else can see what your password is.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, I think this is doable. I don't think it's a flaw in Google and Microsoft's Live Mail. That works fine with Gmail.
Okay. Great.
All right. So there's a few things you should look at. Google gives you the step by step specifically for Live Mail, so I know it'll work. Now we're going to take a break and come back in just a bit. Kynan is on the line. From Palm Springs, he's 13 years old, and he wants to speed up his Windows XP laptop. We could talk a little bit about that. Getting a little bit more performance. I had a debate with my old friend Patrick Norton on the best way to speed up Windows. I want to talk about some of the things he suggested, some of the things I suggest. I'll give you the choice. Hi, Kynan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
How you doing?
Good. What? I've been wanting to call in for such a long time.
Well, I'm so glad you called. What can I do to make your life better?
So, I have a Windows XP. It's a gateway laptop.
Okay.
Half the screen's broken, so I'm using a VGA cord to hook it up to my TV.
Okay, that works.
And what I need is to speed it up, because I use Internet Explorer. Well, I've tried Google Chrome and Firefox. Neither of them, they're both way too slow on my computer.
Was it? Okay, so there's a couple of things that can be going on here. First of all, of course, XP is 15 years older than you.
Yeah.
So it's an old operating system. A lot of times when we do newer stuff in an older operating system, it doesn't behave quite as it did 15 years ago. So one thing is it's just old. But the other thing is the computer has been using that same hard drive, that same operating system for a long time. Have you ever erased the hard drive and reinstalled Windows, for instance?
I was actually thinking about that. But
you've never done that. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. So I am of the opinion that the most common flaw on a computer, the most common flaw, I bet you could figure this out, kind of. What is the most vulnerable, what are the most vulnerable parts on your computer? Is it the chips? They're solid state. They should run forever, right? It's the moving parts, right? The things that have bearings and things that are moving and friction. Well, what's in your computer that's moving?
The
hard drive.
Yeah, the hard drive.
The hard drive. And that's an old hard drive. So hard drives are the single most common point of failure on all computers. Because they wear out, they get, you know, and the real problem is everything you do on that computer relies on the hard drive. It has to even start up, your computer has to load the operating system from the hard drive. And the hard drive has millions of little bits on it. And if one bit is wrong in one place, boom, you won't even be able to run Windows. One bit. Now, most hard drives have error correction circuitry. In fact, they're constantly correcting errors. But it happens over time that there are either too many errors to correct or an error occurs that can't be corrected. And that can cause slowdown because you know what the hard drive does when it can't read a sector? It tries again. And then it tries again. Eventually, it gives up. But if the sector's only a little bit messed up, it might, after four or five tries, be able to read it. It then goes on to the next one. And it has to try again and try again. And that can make a computer slower than anything. So in general, there's other things that can happen. Over time, you get extra software. There could be malware on it. You don't have your disks. That's a problem. You never made boot disks, huh?
Well, I got this. It used to be a laptop that was used at a school.
Yeah, so they didn't give you the software. So
yeah.
You're kind of out of luck. You don't want to buy a new copy of Windows, do you?
No, not really.
I think you are smart, and this might be a good opportunity to put Linux. Did you hear us talking about Linux at the beginning of the show?
I was listening to that, and I was actually thinking about that.
I think go to Ubuntu.com and download it. Make a bootable disk. Try it. If it works okay on that gateway, I would install it. And by the way, wipe the drive down, you know, the thorough format. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You're right. I should upload this to YouTube. Let's see what YouTube does it. 7.2 megabytes. Wow, that's it. 1.8 gigabytes. That's the big one. Today, 11. Okay. Open that. Okay. Uploading. Your video is still uploading. Yeah. 203 minutes remaining. Well, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet. Smartphones, smartwatches, digital photography, and all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you can Skype me. Leslie's on the line from Los Osos, California. Hello, Leslie.
Hello. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm much better now that I'm getting to talk to you.
I hope I can help. What's the matter?
I do, too. I have some 35-millimeter slides that I shot back in the 70s. And they're sitting in a box in our garage. And we don't even have a slide projector. And I would like to be able to convert those and other photographs also that we have, and maybe some negatives, 35-millimeter negatives, to digital.
Yeah.
So I can share them with my family, and so I can look at them myself. And so far, I have been considering the Epson V, as in Victory, 600 photo scanner, or the Canon CanoScan 9000F, as in Frank. And I'm just not sure which direction to go. I'm not real techie.
I'm going to suggest a third direction. So so this is a great project. Everybody should do this because the photos wear out. They crinkle. They get crumpled and old. The slides, who's going to have a – you don't even have a carousel anymore. I used to – I had a bunch of carousels. My mom had stored them in the attic of pictures from my childhood. We'd taken over the years. My dad and mom both loved using slide film. So thousands of slides. Yeah. Now, I did look at doing what you're doing. You can. There's lots of ways you can get them into your computer yourself. They're all slow. So if you think about it, you get this Epson Perfection scanner, which is a great scanner. It has a holder for slides. It has a holder for stills. Scanning slides and stills is a different process. I should explain. Scanning a still is just like scanning a piece of paper. You have a camera, and you bounce light off of the piece of paper, and you have a camera that goes below it and just takes a picture of it and then assembles it.
Okay.
But slide scanning is different because you bounce a light off of a slide. You're not going to get anything. What you need to do is shine the light through the slide. So you'll have to get a scanner that can handle slides and negatives. That means it has light in both the bottom and the top, or it has some mechanism for getting light to go from the top down into the camera. Uh-huh. But Epson makes those, Canon makes those, a lot of companies make them. That's what the CanoScan does. But it's slow. So you put in a picture. Have you ever used your scanner or any scanners? You put in a picture.
Yes,
you, yeah, you press the button. It goes. And then you have the picture. Then you open the lid. You take out the slide. You put in another slide. It goes. And for the rest of your life.
No, I understand. I used to operate a scanner.
Oh, well, you know.
Color even worse. Yeah, it was crazy.
And these are faster and faster, and there are companies coming out with newer slide scanners that will be faster, but still, because it has to scan it. That's just the way it is. So what I did, I got my sister went to my mom's, got up in the attic, took the carousel down, and she took it to a service bureau that does this. And they do something else that you may or may not want to do, because after then you open it in Photoshop and clean it up and balance the colors, because the colors are going to fade. If it's ektachrome, it's going to be blue.
Yeah.
And so then they process it. And what we got was a CD, which my sister sent to all of us, and then I put them online, and we now have forever every one of those pictures, and they look better than they ever looked when we had the slideshows with the projector. I mean, it's just great.
Is that less expensive, do you think, than...
Well, it's not less expensive. It's more expensive, but the question is, how much is your time worth?
Okay.
So...
How did I find one of those
in
my area?
Unfortunately, the one we used in Rhode Island is no longer in business. The truth is, most of these places now, because it's so labor intensive, they send your pictures overseas. They send it to the Philippines or China, where they can get low wage workers to sit there, because it still is. I mean, you still have to do that. So they pay somebody. But you're getting the cost down to between 20 and 30 cents an image. So the first thing you're going to want to do is prune. You even if you do this by hand.
I don't have a viewer.
Well, you can hold them up to the light. I would really kind of do a rough prune. Get the stuff that's out of focus. There might be 10 pictures of Uncle Joe and you never even really liked him. Get the stuff out of there, prune it as best you can. Now, my mom has another set of pictures. She said, oh, by the way, now that that works so well, I got another 1,000 pictures. Oy, oh, yay. So I am going to use a service called Scan Cafe. There are a lot of these still around. Scan Cafe does a very good job, and they do it as cheaply as you can. You can actually send, they will actually send you like what looks like a shoebox, and they say everything you can get into here will scan for a flat fee. It ends up about 20 cents, as low as they say 22 cents per scan. They do a great job. You can pay for U.S. scanning, but it's going to cost you more. It's safe. There is perhaps a slight risk. They don't, when you get the kit, they ship it by the Postal Service. But I think tellingly, when you ship it back to them, they use, I think UPS or FedEx, they use a more reliable service for the actual pictures to be shipped. And I think this is going to work fine. Believe me, at 22 cents a shot, you're worth more than 22 cents a minute.
Okay. A minute.
Well, it's a minute. Yeah, think about it. It's probably a minute a picture, right? Let's say it's only 30 seconds. Then you're 44. You're getting 44 cents a minute.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? I think your time's worth more than that, but it's up to you. Both those scanners you mentioned are great. The Epson has a slide holder that will do 4 or 5 at the same time. That speeds it up a little bit, but there's still the process of going through them, fixing them up, cleaning them up. A good service is going to do a better job.
Okay.
There's another way you can do it, and that is, and it's faster, is with a camera. And we talked about this earlier. Remember the caller who wanted to get documents into her smartphone?
I wasn't listening.
Yeah, if you have, you'd kind of need a kit. You set up an easel, you set up a tripod, you have a decent camera. By the way, it doesn't have to be a very, very fancy camera, because most of these modern cameras are at least as good as any scanner out there. Anything with, 8 megapixels, 10 megapixels, 12 is going to be fine. And you're going to take a picture. Now, on the slide, you're going to have to get a special stand that will shine the light through it. But they sell these. You can find them on eBay. You can find them on Amazon. Kits for doing. Now, that's a little faster because you put the slide in, you press the shutter, click. You take the slide out, you put the next one in, click. That you can do a lot faster than scanning. And if you get the right setup, it's the same. It's going to be as good quality. You're still going to want to open it up in Photoshop or something and get the dust particles. You probably clean it before you do. Slides get dusty. You want to kind of carefully clean them off before you do that. Mm-hmm. But you can do pretty well with a still camera. That's the fastest way to do it.
Okay.
So those are your choices. You can get those two scanners, and if you're retired, this is a great hobby.
Yeah.
You can watch reruns of Oprah while you're doing it, or I like to watch a CSI and then just scan.
I'll just package them up and.
I think you're right.
And send them to you.
Send them to me. I'll do them or Scan Cafe. Scan Cafe.
That's the best idea yet.
Yeah, you've done this, so you know how long this takes.
I'll put them in an orange box.
No, I don't want your pictures. Anyway, great to talk to you. There's your choices. You have to decide how much your time is worth, Leslie. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. On we go. To Gallup, New Mexico. Sounds like an Eagles song. Bob is on the line. Hi, Bob.
Hi, how are you, Leo?
I am running down the road trying to loosen my load. What can I do for you?
Well, first of all, I really appreciate your show. I try to catch it on Saturdays and Sundays, at least in part. But I'm having a lot of trouble with my Samsung phone, and I'm thinking about going to Windows Phone, and I just want your opinion.
You're a brave soul.
I just want your opinion on what it is now and if there is a future.
That's a really good question. Microsoft, as you probably know, took a $7 billion write-off for their acquisition of Nokia because it's such a flop. Windows Phone is not selling. It's maybe 1-2% of the total smartphone market. It's just as bad as it can get. Well, no, it could get worse. It could be BlackBerry. It's not good. However, I got to tell you, these are great phones. In fact, Microsoft just released two new ones, or they've announced them. They should be out very soon, the 950 and 950 XL. that are absolutely in every respect flagship phones with amazing cameras. The Windows 10 mobile operating system, the new version, I think they reinvented mobile operating systems, and they really thought outside the box, and they did a great job. The only problem with Windows Phone is the app ecosystem. Because it's such a small fraction of the total, app developers just don't make apps. And when they do, they don't keep them up to date. And this may or may not be a deal breaker depending on what apps you need. For instance, Facebook did finally make an Instagram for Windows Phone, but they haven't updated it in almost 2 years. Many banks, including Bank of America, Chase, have pulled their apps off Windows Phone. They used to have apps, but because security is such an issue when you're a bank app, they don't want to maintain them anymore, so they just pulled them off. You can't get them. So if you need to do banking on a Windows Phone, you're out of luck. Google, in an, I think, anti-competitive mode, I don't think this is the right thing to do, but they have the right to do it, decided not to provide YouTube, Google Plus, Google Photos apps, Google Maps, these are some of the best mobile apps out there on iOS and Android. They're not available on Windows Phone. So that's the only drawback. These are if you get the 950s, the new one, great phones, probably the best cameras out there. I've seen some sample photos that knock my socks off. But if the apps aren't there, even Microsoft has started pulling its own apps. Photosynth, which was a great app that allowed you to do 360-degree photos, they pulled it off the Windows Phone. This is their own platform. So you really have to wonder. I think Microsoft will continue to make Windows Phone. I don't think they're going to pull the plug on it. Even they've already written it off, but I don't think they're going to kill it. But that's not the issue. It's not the hardware. That's not the issue. The issue is the app ecosystem.
Right. And if they're not supporting their own apps.
I know. Sometimes I just shake my head. I don't understand it. Microsoft their quarterly results came out. They're doing great. Their stock is higher than it's been since the year 2000. This is a company on the move. And Windows 10 is great. And Azure, their cloud services are great. But they have not been able to make Windows Phone work. And unfortunately, this hurts them too with the carriers, because now Verizon's not going to carry Windows Phone anymore. The carriers, even if you go to the stores and they have them, if you go to the T-Mobile store, ask for Windows Phone, they'll say, no, you don't want that. So it's only going to get worse.
Yeah, I'll tell you what the issue is. I grandfathered unlimited data in
AT&T.
It actually Verizon.
Oh, yeah. Well, so you forget it, because you can't get the latest Windows phones on Verizon. So if you want to stay on Verizon.
Well, Verizon is still selling Windows phones. They're selling three of them.
They're not good ones, though. Yeah, I know. But the Icon, which I like, but this is the last generation. They're not going to sell the 950, which is, frankly, if you're going to get a new phone, there's no reason not to get the 950s, the 950 or 950 XL.
Right.
You could get an Icon, right? But it's out of date, and they may not even put Windows 10 Mobile on it.
All right. What I ended up doing was buying a phone. A couple of years ago, I got a Samsung S4, which at the time was state of the art. It worked great for about 2 years. And then it started overheating in videos, and it wouldn't respond to my voice commands.
Well, time to get rid of it.
Well, so what happened is Verizon gave me a new one.
Oh, nice.
And it was all set and ready to go, and it started doing the same thing in about a week or two. So I went and I got another one, and this third one is doing the same thing, and I'm thinking,
stop the insanity. Don't buy any more of these phones.
Right.
Right.
But what I'm thinking is that the software improvements are, overdriving the hardware.
Well, that's a really old Samsung phone. You're not talking the Note 4. You're talking the S4, right?
Yeah, the S4. Yeah.
So that's three generations old. I mean, we've got the S5 and the S6, the Note 5. The Note 5 is a very, very good phone from Samsung. It's fast. It's reliable. I don't have any software issues. The S6 is pretty good. I had some issues with that. I think they've improved most of those, and it's a beautiful phone. But I'm not. But I wouldn't recommend an S4 any more than I recommend an Icon. Don't get an old phone. If you're getting a new phone, get the newer phones, because just as you say, you're going to be using the newer software. You want the latest operating system. You want, for security reasons alone, you want a newer phone, because even if you stuck with Android, frankly, at this point, here's what I would say. If you want the full app ecosystem and you don't want an iPhone, get an Android phone, but don't get another Samsung. The best Android phone out there is just coming out now from Google, the Nexus 5X, which is a 5.2-inch screen, and the Nexus 6P, which is a 5.7-inch screen. Everybody agrees this is the Android phone you want. It's the best battery life, the best camera. You're going to have the least hardware problems, the least software problems. Google's going to stand by those phones and continue to update them. They are not sold by carriers. They will not work on Verizon, I don't think. They might. I don't know. That's a good question. Somebody's been using it, has tried them on Sprint, and it works. But that if you're going to do Android, this, as far as I'm concerned, give up on all these third-party Samsung and HTC, because they just mess Android up. The time has come now. Google has finally made these Nexus phones good enough, and by the way, low-priced enough. They're also among the most affordable Nexus Android phones, that there's no reason to get anything but a Google phone. Maybe a Moto X, maybe. But battery life isn't great on those. The battery life on the 6P is phenomenal, I'm told. I don't have mine. It will come in a couple of weeks. That's the negative, is they're back-ordered forever. If you insist on Android, then I think the 6P, that's the one you want. iOS, the 6S Plus, great battery life, great phone, and of course, a great app ecosystem. Windows phones are great on paper, in theory, in hardware, in software, but there's no apps. That just means you can't use them. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. All right, I've been informed I've done this wrong. So I have to stitch it first in the Ricoh software. So let's stop this. So how do you do it live? Because this is what it's looking like right now. So how would you do it live? Do they have live stitching software? How to edit it, I can see. Don't steam up my camera. Yeah, we have to study up on this. So I'm importing video. It takes a while. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 88. Ask Leo. Back to the phones we go. By the way, I've learned a few things about this 360-degree video. The video I uploaded to Facebook is all messed up. Don't. You're not going to be able to see that. I need to convert it, apparently. There's some sort of thing I have to do. This is all very complicated. But before the end of the day, you should have video on YouTube and Facebook that shows what it looks like. You can actually sit in the studio in the radio show and look around while I'm doing my show, at least the first 15 minutes. Michael is on the line next from Wisconsin. Hello, Michael.
Hey, Leo.
Hey.
I'm a graphic artist. I'm a tradigital graphic artist.
I like that new word. You just invented a new word, tradigital.
I did. I coined that word years ago.
What do it mean?
It means I started out traditional, yeah, and I became digital.
Okay.
So I'm a morph between the two. I started out silk screening T-shirts, and we were doing art by hand, and then the computers came in, and I was also a sign painter doing traditional sign painting by hand, and the computers came up with these ways of doing everything digital. So I am traditional and digital.
I like it.
I still draw with a pencil, but I've got a Cintiq 24-inch, and I draw
on the screen.
It's great.
What software do you use?
In the T-shirt industry, we're using Photoshop and Illustrator.
Okay. I know a lot of fine artists like to use Corel's Painter, for instance.
Yes.
Because then you actually have paint. You know, you have acrylics and oils and watercolors, and it looks like that as you paint. But, of course, my favorite traditional, I like the word, I'm using this now. I hope you don't mind.
No, use it.
I love it.
I'm trying to get everybody to start using it, because there's only us for a little while, and then we're going to be gone, Leo, the tradigital artists.
You're right. It's a Morphing. You're morphing one into the other. But my friend Bert Monroy, who is an amazing artist, he uses Photoshop to do his photorealistic paintings. They are paintings.
I'm a fan of his. I've studied his stuff. I've watched him on lynda.com. Right. And yeah, it's great.
That's tradigital, I think.
Yeah.
So what's your question?
Okay. So I've got a question about my browser. I'm on a Mac system. I've got iMac, and it's about 5 years old. And recently, the browser started just slowing down, like on my front page when I open up Safari. Anything I click on, any story, will not open up. Just kind of like gets stuck there. Other programs like Twit, if I'm watching you and I go open another screen in Safari and try and do a search, all of a sudden you'll freeze. The video will freeze. So anyway, I also have a laptop, and I don't have that experience with my laptop. And I have an iPad, too, and I don't have that experience. It's just my browser, and I've tried the other browser, Firefox, and for whatever reason, this computer, this iMac, and browsers are just dying when I open up that front page. Now, I can go to Facebook and go looking through it, and then all of a sudden I'll click on a movie and it'll get stuck. It won't go anywhere. Anyway.
Sounds like something's wrong.
Yeah.
So I think there's a few things you can do. You know, this is partly just the way the internet is. This is a 5-year-old computer, and now modern sites are a lot more demanding than they used to. Apple does not support Flash anymore. So if you want to use Flash, have you tried, you're just using Safari and Firefox. Have you tried Chrome?
No, but I thought about that. I was wondering if maybe Chrome
would try it just to see if it's the machine or the software. Chrome comes with Flash built in. And so that way it's safe. It automatically updates, much like Firefox does, so that you don't have to worry about security issues with Chrome. Google's done a very good job. But even Google acknowledges the web is too slow these days. They've started a new project called AMP, A-M-P, for accelerated mobile pages that they hope digital publishers will use instead of just plain old HTML. They'll use the AMP model to have pages load much, much faster. It does a bunch of things. Part of the problem is there's a lot of junky JavaScript on pages. You can't see it, but it's sitting there on a lot of pages. It's one of the things that's pushed people to using ad blockers. You might just try this to see. Firefox, I think, has it, but Chrome also has it as a plugin. If you install Chrome, do try Chrome. It's my favorite browser, even on the Mac. Safari should be the fastest on the Mac, by the way. So, but what you said it's 5 years old. Have you updated the operating system at all?
No, actually, I'm on 10.8 because this is a working computer, and I do my artwork, my T-shirt artwork on this computer. I was kind of afraid of going into newer operating systems.
Well, that might be part of it, also. Yeah,
I probably should update it because I did update my laptop, and I'm not having that problem on my laptop. My laptop can open up Safari and doesn't get stuck. But then I've got that updated by, I think...
Yeah, that could be part of it, too.
Yeah.
Try Chrome. If Chrome works better, then you're golden. You might try, if it's still pretty slow, I know I'm nervous about saying this, but an ad blocker, I recommend uBlock, U-B-L-O-C-K, Origin. That is a free ad blocker. It's a Chrome extension. And that's going to be, it depends on what sites you go see, but some sites now load so much stuff as part of their ad stuff. Ad tech has gotten crazy, and an older machine may be choking on that. It may be it can't be your internet because on a newer computer you don't have the problem. So it has to be limited to that computer, maybe the operating system. Try Chrome. That might improve things for you. Make sure you're using the latest Safari. I don't know if you can update Safari without updating OS X. You might need to update OS X a little bit. You don't have to go all the way to El Capitan. It might also be DNS. Now, somebody's pointing this out. That can also be slow. Usually, though, that's specific to your whole network, not just one computer, but maybe you have custom settings in your network settings on that computer. DNS is the system where you type in a domain name like yahoo.com, and then DNS, the domain name system, converts that to a number, because it's like a phone book. You need to use the number. Your browser wants a number, not a name. So this all happens transparently. You type in yahoo.com, it looks up the yahoo.com number and then goes out to that specific server, gets the data and brings it back. If that phone book lookup is slow, the whole net feels really slow, especially when you go to a website for the first time. So it can be sometimes that's the problem. Make sure you're using your internet service provider's domain name server. That's usually the fastest. If not, if it's not the fastest, then I recommend opendns.com. You can use their domain name server, and that's usually pretty good too. But you know, there's a lot of other things that could go wrong. It would be impossible for me, even in a 3-hour show, to enumerate them all. But there's two things to look at anyway. I find Chrome is often a much better choice. 8888 Ask Leo. I hate to recommend an ad blocker because we are ad supported after all. But what's happened on the internet is these ad tech companies like Google have started to inject so much JavaScript and so much other stuff to do page takeovers. And there's so many on a page. Sometimes that page is 4 or 5 times bigger, can take 3 or 4 times longer to load just because of that. If you do use an ad blocker, please do me a favor. Don't block ads on sites you want to support. Because remember, they're not getting the revenue from those ads when you block them. Most ad blockers allow you to do that. But it is a good test just to see if that's what's bogging you down. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. All right. So I have now converted. Yeah. You're right, Anthony. Anthony solved it. I've converted this video. So now we're watching the video.
Oh, that's fun. That's like a weekend, huh?
Long weekend out.
I like
this. This is me talking to you guys.
I like doing this, and I like to do that if we can.
So now,
I'm recording this.
It did downgrade the quality in the stitching.
360 degrees. So that means.
So now I'm going to take this converted file
around
and upload that to YouTube.
Google Cardboard, you can see you guys. I hope you don't mind.
It's kind of interesting, huh?
And you can see Kim. And you can see my pumpkin, and you can look around. So that's going to be kind of interesting.
What does the live preview look like?
Look at input 5. Have you fixed it?
Well,
who's sleeping in my chair? Get out of there. All right, so we do have to run it. You see, if I run it through this, that does fix it. So that makes it, let me just see here. That takes the 1.8 gigabyte file. And it doesn't make it much smaller. So that's good. And it then turns it into something that looks like that. Which apparently, that's what something like Cardboard needs. It's this, right? So let me upload this to my Facebook. Yeah, this video won't be, what you're seeing is unstitched. So what we need is some sort of mechanism to stitch in real time to do live video. But what I'm uploading now is the version that I got. I wonder what I can open this with. Let's just see. Let's see if I open it in QuickTime. What do I get? Yeah, see, that's not so good. You have to... But this would work in Cardboard. So I could put this somehow, if you get this in the Cardboard, this would work. So, but Facebook and YouTube should automatically make it a version that you can, I think. We'll see. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo, the last segment of the show today. Let's go to Robert in Belmont Shores, California. Hello, Robert.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. I hope your bucket doesn't have a hole in it.
No, but I'm hoping that El Chapo has dug a tunnel from Petaluma to Cupertino, because I need your help here. I'm totally disappointed that the brand new 27-inch iMac maxes out its memory at 32 gigs. I read that in iMore and 9to5Mac and a few of the other sites.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, I need to not only beef up, you know, my current Mac, not in terms of memory, but just discard it and begin anew. And I don't want to, you know, buy something and then 3 weeks later Apple, you know, moves their hierarchy up and then puts more memory in it at the same price. So if you've got your crystal ball there, tell me what Apple is up to.
Well, do you feel like you really need more than 32 gigabytes of RAM?
Yeah, because I want to, you know, I edit video and I want to move from HD to 4K.
Right.
And the brand new 27-inch iMac will do 4K, but I want to do it quickly, not slowly.
Right. I wonder, so they've got four memory slots in this new iMac, and you can max them out with 8 gigabyte sticks per memory slot. And I wonder if that's a hardware limitation. I just don't know. Now, if you get the Mac Pro,
uh-oh.
Can you put more memory in there? Sure.
Yeah, but I want to not, you know, spend $9,000.
Well, and I also don't want you to get the Mac Pro because it's terrible.
Right.
But let me just see what the max on the Mac Pro is.
Well, what happened was I went to the different, you know, insider websites for Apple, and both iMore and 9to5Mac and all the others are saying, hey, its circuitry will take 64, but Apple's only offering 32.
Yeah, this because the Mac Pro will take 16 gig. It still has four slots, but it will take 16 gigabyte memory modules, so it maxes out at 64 gigs.
Okay.
That's the max of the max of the max. By the way, that'll add $1,200.
Right. But philosophically, what is Apple up to? What's the hierarchy here?
You're asking the wrong person. I don't know what Apple's up to. I don't know if anybody knows what Apple's up to. That's a good question. I would love to ask an Apple engineer what's the thinking. I mean, one of the things they'd like to do is distinguish the 5K iMacs from the Mac Pro. And so what they might say, and this would be a marketing answer, is, well, if you need more memory, you should use a Mac Pro because that's the Pro version. But I have to tell you, as the owner of a Mac Pro, in almost every respect, the 5K iMacs are faster, better, more reliable.
That's what I hear.
And cheaper.
Yeah.
So I actually have a Mac Pro on my office floor that's not being used because I replaced it with the 5K iMac, and I'm much happier.
I mean, I could go the route with a third-party memory company and get, you know, more memory, but that's going to add several hundred dollars to the price tag, and I'd rather just do it right from the beginning.
Yeah.
Since the computer...
Well, you're stuck because Apple... Now, the question really is, will Apple change their tune?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I think the number of people who need more than 32 gigs is small. They want you to buy a Mac Pro.
Oh.
And then there's an even smaller percentage, I don't even know if it exists, that needs more than 64 gigs. So I think from Apple's point of view, this is exactly how they want it and probably exactly how they keep it until such time as they either kill the Mac Pro or replace it.
Okay.
So I don't think you're you're just going to have to live with 32 gigs, I guess.
Or spend the money and upgrade it third party.
Yeah, and have you gone to Otherworld Computing to see if they offer bigger modules?
OWC, the day after the new iMac came out, they offered them.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, MacSales.com, that's Otherworld Computing, always offers better prices for RAM than Apple does anyway.
Yeah.
So you should, now it's too bad you can't get an unpopulated iMac. So you could put all your own RAM in it, but just right. Get the minimum amount of RAM you can and upgrade. How much does Otherworld Computing charge for these bigger sticks?
You know, I haven't looked at it specifically, but all I know is Apple wants 700 more
right.
to max out.
Let's see. iMac memory upgrades they'll go up to 64 gigs.
Yeah.
They will sell you on the late 2015 5K iMac, they will sell you the 16 gig sticks. It may be that nobody... Wait a minute. Am I right? No, it looks like... Yeah, they... Okay, so the hardware supports up to 16 gigs a slot. Apple won't sell it to you.
Right.
But you can get it. And you can get it at... let me see how much it's going to cost you. $1,200. Same... Oh. You know what? That's the same cost as the Mac Pro RAM upgrade. So maybe Apple is not... gouging people as they have in the past. 4 16 gigabyte sticks of RAM for a 5K iMac cost $300 each.
I was just hoping that, because you know what happens with Apple is every time they upgrade their hardware is they'll take one leap up.
Right.
The price will be the same.
I would be shocked to see them change that just because they've got to have something that makes people buy the Mac Pro.
Oh, okay.
So I would, you know, again, I don't have any inside information on Apple, and Apple has often thrown me a curve.
All right.
But in this case, I feel like Apple is... It's not technical. It's purely a marketing issue. There is a physical limit on the amount of RAM you can put in each of those slots on a 5K. It's 16 gigabytes per slot. The fact that they don't sell it that way tells me they want to make a distinction, a differentiation between the more expensive Mac Pro and the 5K. Well, they want people like you, the pros, to buy a Mac Pro.
I don't want to buy a Mac Pro.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you because it's not really expandable. That's the only thing you can expand.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise it has to all be stuff hanging off of it via cables, and I don't think that's very attractive either.
I'm already doing that now.
You know, truthfully, we moved our editing solution to Dell's, I'll be honest with you, because we weren't sure what Apple's strategy with the Mac Pro was going to be long run. We use Adobe Premiere. We were using Final Cut, but Apple kind of abandoned us with Final Cut, so we moved to Premiere. And once we moved to Premiere, there was nothing to keep us from buying less expensive, more capable Windows machines.
Right.
So that's what my editors use now.
Thank you, Leo.
Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. A little spelunking into the caves of Apple marketing. Yeah, I was actually very happy when I upgraded to the 5K iMac. That is a beautiful machine. I don't even have the most recent one, the one they just released. It's very hard to predict Apple. I am not going to predict them. We've heard rumors now that the iPad Pro, that new big iPad, will be out in a couple of weeks. That'd be nice. They did say November, didn't they? Well, we're getting there. Only six more days till November, so that makes sense. But, you know, Apple could do whatever they want because they keep a tight lid on all this stuff. You just don't know. And when I come back next week, I will have some new stuff to talk about. I'm going to have more information about these 360-degree very affordable cameras from Ricoh. I will talk about the new Surface Book. I purchased one as soon as they were available for order, and it's on its way. It shipped from China, flew over my head to Memphis, Tennessee, is now flying back to California from Memphis, Tennessee. It should come tomorrow. I'll have that to talk about and, of course, answer all your tech questions. We do that every weekend on this very radio station. I hope you'll stop by. And if you hear something and you want more information, the website's great. Free and available and open all the time, 24/7 at techguylabs.com. No sign-up required. Thanks, Kim Schaffer, for doing a great job on the phones. Thanks to you for being here. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security and security now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today and Tech News Tonight. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.